It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. The Equinox Marathon is one of the most challenging anywhere as it climbs up over Esther Dome in Fairbanks. It is also Alaska's oldest. At one time, it was the largest marathon in America, and it was one of the first to field women. For today's show, I'm joined by this year's Equinox champion, Matthias Sari, who has won an amazing 6 times and has also just published a book about the race. In the second half, we'll hear an interview I recorded in Fairbanks with a trails volunteer who will tell us about many of the races and routes that make that community a great place to visit. It's not only the land and events, but the relaxed Fairbanks spirit that makes it a good place to go and is certainly embodied in the big event, the Equinox Marathon. Thanks for being here, Matthias.
Great to be here, Charles.
So you won the race, which runs in the middle of September. Tell me about your race this year. What was it? Was it a tough one, or how did the story unfold?
Well, the Equinox is always challenging. This year it seemed especially challenging, in part due to the competition. There was a sort of a head-to-head duel between myself and a guy named Chris Eversman, and typically the marathon is long enough that things shake out and you're not racing head-to-head late in the race. And this year we went back and forth for about 15 miles or so, and I finally was able to break away on a downhill at mile 24. So it was a rewarding way to win, and an exciting race for people who follow it.
Yeah, really. Well, if you've won the race 6 times and you've been second 6 times, that's an amazing record, but it must give you an incredible level of familiarity with the race, which would be a really good tool in your toolbox as you're competing on a duel like that.
Yeah, it's a definite advantage. I mean, this year I felt like I hadn't done the typical Equinox-style training, which for me is running fewer mountains and more faster turnover road-type training. But definitely having that experience running this race 17 times, knowing when to hold back and when to go for it is a big help for sure, and aided me this year.
That was something I found interesting in your book, is that there's kind of a different training regime for this race because it includes a long flat, and then it also includes running over a pretty substantial mountain, which is about, what's the elevation gain?
The elevation gain of Esther Dome is 1,800 feet over 4 miles.
I mean, that's a challenging run just by itself. Leave out the rest of the factor on a marathon.
Yeah, you can sort of divide the course into thirds, and the Equinox Patch is actually a perfect example of that. The bottom line, so the patch is in a triangle shape, and it's
The patch that you get at the finish line.
It's highly prized and well earned. So the bottom of the triangle represents sort of the flattish first 9 miles of the race. Quite a bit of technical trail, but not too much climbing. You go past the Muskox Farm, which is a unique aspect, and there's more spectators in that part. And then the upper triangle of the ascent would be the Esther Dome climb, which I just mentioned, 4 mile climb, followed by an out and back section on a ridge, sort of the crux of the race, I think, for most people, not just the climb, but a lot of people tend to sort of exhale and think the worst is hardest is behind them when they reach the top. But then you have this rutted road and some steep descents and climbs after that really can be taxing mentally. You do have two-way traffic through part of that where you get to see other people, and that's always a boost. And then the final third, the other drop on the triangle would be the run from mile 17 to the finish, where you come off Esther Dome and run all the way back to University of Alaska Fairbanks, where it started. And
a downhill run like that can be very painful too.
It is. It can be fast miles if you hold up well, but it can also tear you down. There's more than one person, myself included, who's cramped and walked, you know, downhill when you should be running fast. So that's one thing I love about the Equinox is the challenge. There's a chapter in the book called No 2 Miles the Same about the course, and it's always changing, which I love. It keeps you focused and keeps you energized.
Yeah, and as you were just saying, that a lot of it is quite rough. I mean, it's not like a road race at all.
No, I've compared various fastest times for the Equinox to some what someone would run on a flat course, say like Chicago, and it's at least 25 minutes slower, the Equinox, due to the technical nature and the climbing, and then even just, you know, the pounding at the end that a lot of people aren't prepared for.
What does trail running add, you know, that like a traditional sort of big city marathon when you're like on a sidewalk or in the middle of a road? What does trail running add in terms of the challenge? It's more mental, or how would you characterize it?
It's mental. It's physical. There's more likelihood of spraining an ankle. It's you can't really zone out like you can on a road. So, like I said, that's one thing I love about the Equinox. But some people, it's a little much for them, too. You definitely have to train for that kind of terrain. And the Equinox uses so many different skill sets that you can't just be a good climber or a good descender. You need to run technical trail. You need to run fast on flatter, easier surfaces to do well.
Yeah. We're talking about the Equinox Marathon today with Matthias Saari, and part of a total show on Fairbanks today for Outdoor Explorer. The Equinox is, I think it's such a good symbol of Fairbanks because... it's reading the first chapter of your book, talking about how the race started. It was such a typical Fairbanks thing. Well, let's do it, and not really worrying about the difficulties, and then choosing a course which was crazy difficult, really, because, well, we want to have some nice views along it, you know, and the whole thing has got this fun aspect of just like whatever happens is good, which to me is like part of the spirit of Fairbanks, which is a really open town and really kind of Alaskan in that sense. In folks who want to pick up the book, it's called The Equinox, Alaska's Trailblazing Marathon by my guest Matthias Saari. And you can get it through his website, which is linked on our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Just click on today's show on The Equinox and you'll find it. And Matthias is also going to be speaking on Tuesday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at REI. He's going to have a slideshow and then books to sign. So if you're listening the first time we air the show, you'll be able to attend that. I think that will be in the past when we have the rerun. So this race obviously became a huge part of your life in that you competed so many times, then you ended up writing a book about it. What was it that caused it to become so important to you?
Yeah, it's no exaggeration. This race definitely changed my life. When I moved to Fairbanks in 1998, I was not a runner. I had just started running and sort of fell into the Equinox by accident. I was going to do the relay that year, which is a nice introduction to the race, and you only run 9 miles, and most people that are reasonably fit can handle that. And my relay partners abandoned me and decided not to do it, and I figured, well, how hard can it be? I'll just do the whole thing. And I'd never run more than 15 miles at the time. And it was really a tough first experience. I cramped and I walked and I was miserable. And when I finished, I was almost immediately hooked on it. I wanted to get better at it. I wanted to learn the story behind the race. I'd heard some stories about it going back 50 years with huge crowds of people. And it was just immediately apparent that it was a big deal in the community. And so...
Was it the challenge, you think, that got you, or the sort of the beauty of the route? Or, you know, was there any one thing that you could point to?
It's hard to pinpoint one thing. It was just the whole aura of the event. And then I just started talking to people, and everyone, you know, had an Equinox story that they were eager to share, or more than one. And once I just sort of loosely started compiling them, first in my head and then on paper, and pretty quickly realized that this was book-worthy and really a unique event that sort of could have only happened in Fairbanks. You mentioned the independent spirit of it, and, you know, the title, the Alaska's Trailblazing Marathon, the Trailblazers, I guess, was... What really grabbed me initially, the women, the children, the hikers, that other races just weren't experiencing at the time.
Yeah, and in this first chapter, you talk about the history of the race. It's just some guys to get together basically and say, well, let's have a marathon. And in pretty short order, they go out and build a trail, which is first crazy on the beginning. You know, like most people say, have a marathon, we'll go down East Street and we'll go down Fifth Avenue. No, they actually go out in the wilderness and blaze a trail for this route, and then they just start doing it, and there's hardly any marathons when it starts. It's like one of the first ones.
Yeah, the easiest thing to do would have been just to use the existing dirt and paved roads around Fairbanks, and that's what most races do. Fairbanks didn't want to do that. They wanted to add some challenge. They wanted to add the views of Esterdome, the Tanana Valley, the Alaska Range from there, and they wanted it to be primarily on trail. You know, it was the university ski team that started it, and they were accustomed to skiing on trails, obviously, and running on trails at a time when there weren't many runners. So Nat Goodhue, who lived in Anchorage for quite a while and now is in Vermont, he and his girlfriend at the time, Gail Bakken, as well as Jim Mahaffey, the ski coach, is another name that Anchorage folks might know as a pioneer in cross-country skiing.
Yeah, APU,
in Alaska. The three of them are sort of credited as being the founders. Jim was the primary organizer, and Nat and Gail
building the trail. And you mentioned Ted Middleton, who's a running sort of a huge running figure here in Anchorage, and was also responsible for helping create our mayor's marathon here.
Yeah, there's a lot of Anchorage connections. Tim was a rifle shooter at UAF at the time, not a runner, but liked to work on trails.
And for big time,
And now he's, out of the founders, he's the one that's still going and aspires to become the oldest Equinox finisher at age 79, which he could do in 3 years. So he was 76 and finished it this year. So That was the humble origins.
It's a wonderful history, and I love the fact that they actually went out to build a trail in one summer to hold this marathon. And then the first people doing it must have been running over some really tough trail. But they did it, and they finished it. It was a success, and then pretty soon after that, it kind of blows up into a huge, huge thing with many, many people running. It becomes the biggest marathon in the country, bigger than like Boston and New York, if those were even started yet.
Yeah, nobody saw that coming. Nat was quoted as saying, you know, I think there are 117 people that first year, and he thought, well, we'll give it 3 or 4 years, you know, maybe we'll have 30 people or 40 people show up the first year, and then it'll have a boost the first few years, and then people will lose interest and it'll go away, and we'll have a ski trail to fall back on, at least, was how he envisioned it after 5 years. And within the third or fourth year, it had just exploded. Fairbanks...
people loved it.
Embraced it. Yeah, they loved it, and they loved that anyone was welcome to do it. It wasn't limited to male runners, which is, you know, most of the races around the country.
I found that so surprising that in those days that women did not run marathons, so that this was one of the very first marathons to have substantial numbers of women in.
It was deemed damaging to their health. It was deemed, you know, too hard for a woman to do, and apparently, these fallacies took hold elsewhere, and at the Equinox, they didn't even consider not allowing women.
It's like, they didn't even care. Right. Didn't cross their minds. I love that.
So, like, Boston Marathon didn't have women until 1973, and the Equinox, you know, was way ahead of its time in allowing women in 1963. It's not just women, but kids, female, you know, boys and girls came out, you know. Hate to say it, but nowadays to get a young kid to go do 5 miles, that's asking a lot.
Yeah.
And here at the Equinox, kids weren't all running. Most of them were hiking, but spending a full day, 8-10 hours out there with their friends or their family. They got credit through the gym class at school. And you would have hundreds of kids doing an extremely challenging trail, 26 miles. A lot of them dropped out on Esterdome halfway, but even that they attempted it.
It's wonderful, yeah. And it's something about that Fairbanks attitude that, you know, they want things to be hard up there. The other thing that I found, a lot of things that I found interesting about it, but one of them was that running culture really hadn't gotten started yet in the early 60s. And so you talk about the fact that they didn't have running shoes. And one of the folks in the book talks about, like, we'd be running down the road and people would stop in their cars and say, you know, are you okay? Do you need a ride? You know, why are you running? And some people were even running like in street shoes, you know, so that the real runners were running in like Converse sneakers, but some people were running a marathon in like hush puppies. And it's almost mind-boggling.
Yeah, and obviously there were a lot of foot problems because of that. That forced a lot of people to drop out or gut it out in horrible pain. But this was before real running shoes. So you had, you know, the Chuck Converse All-Star high-top basketball shoes were popular shoe. And
can you imagine how that would feel? I can't even imagine it.
And hiking boots and just whatever shoes people had around, because there weren't specific running shoes, really, till the 70s. So, yeah, it just shows the toughness of the people to persevere despite inadequate gear and inadequate training, too. I mean, people weren't training to go 26 miles.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were in over their head, but, you know,
they just got it out.
Fairbanks, I mean, I think Alaska in general, and especially Fairbanks, was really active, pretty fit town at the time. And and there weren't a lot of recreational activities and entertainment options at the time. So this people wanted to try the Equinox, and it became a big thing to do. And this lasted for quite a while. It's sort of ironic that when the running boom hit in the 80s, the Equinox had actually dropped from numbers well over 1,000 in the late 60s and early 70s, which made it the largest marathon in the world for 3 years. All the way down to about 200 runners when running was picking up across the country. And then gradually by the 50th running in 2012, it had made it back up over 1,000 and is in a good place again. But there was a low period for about a decade in the 80s.
Interesting. So we're talking about the Equinox Marathon, and the whole show is about Fairbanks today, about the trails in Fairbanks and some really great stuff you can do. I've enjoyed a number of times going up to Fairbanks to ski and cycle with friends up there. And my guest right now is Matthias Saari. He's written this new book, The Equinox, Alaska's Trailblazing Marathon. And he's the winner 6 times, including this year, of the Equinox, which runs in September. And Matthias was speaking at REI on the 11th of October at 6 p.m. if you want to see his slides and buy a book. And you can also get his book by finding his website through ours at outdoorexplorer.org. So the book is just packed with different stories and anecdotes, and it's fun because you can just pick it up at any spot and find something funny and interesting to read and probably pretty surprising. One of the stories I liked was the year that it snowed just substantially. I mean, this huge, deep, deep, deep snow, such that people were like post-holing in the snow. And the University of Alaska Fairbanks at that time was a sponsor of the race, and their risk manager made them cancel the race. But the runners didn't care. A bunch of them came out and ran it anyway. And that must have been an incredible thing, to do a marathon in deep snow.
Yeah, another classic example of Fairbanks' independent spirit. They weren't going to be told that the race shouldn't happen or wasn't happening, and probably 30 or 40 of them showed up anyways. And that was a fun chapter to write, to piece that all back together. But there was 2 to 3 feet of snow up on Esther Dome. And by and large, everyone who participated said it was the most fun they ever had in the Equinox. And they didn't get a patch that year, but most people consider it an official finish nonetheless.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. And their times were terrible, of course, because they were wading through deep snow in the marathon.
And it didn't matter. It was all about being out there.
Yeah. What were some of the other sort of famous favorite anecdotes that you have that you picked up? You got so many.
Yeah, I mean, there's some remarkable stories of young kids, you know, as young as 7, doing the race, not just finishing, but running fast. You know, Mara Rabinowitz, an Anchorage lawyer now, she won the race at age 12 in 1979 and set a record that was really remarkable. And on the other end of the spectrum,
I wonder if there's ever been a 12-year-old who's won a marathon around the country. It's unbelievable.
Not that I've heard of. And she's actually not the youngest winner, because Keegan Randall's mother, Deborah Randall, was also 12 and younger than Mara.
Wow.
And won it a few years before. There were lots of Olympians who were training at the biathlon training center at Fort Richardson that did the race and dominated the competitive race in the late 60s. On the other end of the age spectrum, Marcy Trent, another well-known Anchorage figure who tragically died in a bear mauling in 1995. She won the Equinox 3 times in her 50s and recruited a lot of Anchorage runners through the Pulsators Running Club to go to Fairbanks. There's people who've done the race legally blind.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and it's not an easy trail, as we've discussed. There's people who've done it with on crutches.
Wow. It's almost like it's more of there's no holds barred.
There's no, it's sort of where there's a will, there's a way, and people will figure out how to get there. It just goes on and on, really. I mean, there's people who've done it over 50 times. There's a guy named Mark Wood who did the inaugural running in 1963 and then has done the race in each of its 6 decades. So it just gets in your blood, you know, and people want to keep doing it.
Yeah, that is so amazing. So do they have a lot of, considering that they don't really have any standards for who can get into the race, do they have a lot of support along the way for people who get in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, there's checkpoints there's probably 5 or 6 spots where you can get food and drink along the way. And you're close enough to a road where if you got into trouble, you could flag down a car, catch a ride back. So it's not like Resurrection Pass, Ultra Run, or Angel Creek up in Fairbanks where you're truly out in the wilderness and need to totally take care of yourself.
Yeah,
I mean, it's on the outskirts of Fairbanks, but it's still, and it's changed a lot from the original trail due to development, but the current directors want to keep that founder's prerogative of being on the trails as much as possible. Yeah. And they've done a good job with that.
So there's still a lot of people who just do it like hiking with a backpack, as you mentioned in the book. In the early days, most people were just walking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the early days, you'd have maybe a couple hundred runners and then 1,000 hikers. Nowadays, it's almost all runners. There's a few throwbacks who still like to hike it, and I think it's great to keep that tradition alive. And I plan to hike it someday myself when the time's right, just to get that experience. And you also have the relay now, which brings in over 100 teams, so 300 or 400 people who do a third of the course. You don't get a patch for that, but it's still a great experience to run a third of it and be a spectator and be out there to experience the whole course. So and they used to have an ultra run, which has since been disbanded. So it's changed from the early years of only the marathon and almost all hikers to a lot more variety in the participants.
So tell me about your training and how you've obviously been super successful in this race, and you've been successful in a lot of mountain running events around Alaska. Do you tailor your training towards the equinox primarily, or how do you train for this race?
I don't focus on it so much like I used to when I first lived in Fairbanks. The equinox is the event, and they have a bunch of other events that sort of build towards the equinox, which is the pinnacle, and it all sort of is training for the equinox. And so I followed that, and when I first got into running, I was figuring it out. I had a lot more structure in my training as far as doing your weekly long run and doing your track work and your tempo runs. And I've moved almost to the other extreme now, where there's very little structure in my training. It's mostly almost all off-road, trails and mountains, a lot of hiking mixed in, not that much pure running, actually. And I found that I still, my times haven't slowed down much, even as I've gotten older. So the trails, I think, help build the strength and durability you need at the equinox. And I make sure to do a handful of specific workouts in the month leading up to the equinox, but that system might not work for everyone. Yeah. But it keeps me happy. I'd rather spend most of my time running around the mountains,
right?
And that was a big part of why I moved to Anchorage 6 years ago. But the equinox is, along with Mount Marathon, are probably the only two events on my running calendar that are non-negotiable. I'll do them every year as long as I'm able. And they mean that much to me, especially the equinox.
Yeah. Well, distance runners are made over a series of years, right? I mean, it's like it's additive year after year as you build the type of muscle that can store the energy you need and pay it out, or so I've been told.
Yeah, I mean, it took me 7 years to become competitive enough to where I was contending, and I think I was blessed with some talent that I didn't realize I had. I wasn't a runner growing up, but I was an active kid that did a lot of sports and was reasonably fit, I think. But once I started running, you know, I I improved by an hour over 7 years. And yeah. I had to stick with it, and it's pretty dedicated and determined. And
you had some hard times, too.
Yeah, I mean, my running career, I think, for the Equinox sort of paralleled the writing of the book in some ways. I mean, it was a labor of love, and I worked really hard at it, and I spent a long time working on it to get it right.
All right. Well, great, and a good job. Obviously successful in the race, and I think successful in the book, too. Matthias Saari, author of The Equinox, Alaska's Trailblazing Marathon. You can find it through our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Just click on today's show. Thanks for being with us, Matthias.
Sure, and just want to mention the book is available for retail at Skinny Raven Sports, either downtown or at Diamond. I encourage anyone to give the Equinox a try. It's a really unique and fun event.
Yeah, and in the second half, we'll hear about a lot more events and trails up in Fairbanks and what's happening in the trail community up there. It really is a fun place to visit. So stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I'm coming to you from Fairbanks. We've been talking about the Equinox Marathon, but there's a lot of other great stuff to do in Fairbanks on trails, running, biking, skiing, pretty amazing trail network, snow machining, all kinds of stuff. And so I'm visiting with an old friend of mine, Eric Troyer, who's kind of a trails godfather around here. He's done the work for decades in, you know, protecting and talking about the Fairbanks trails, and you kind of have an organization that you're part of, but also you just do a lot of stuff on your own, and you do some newsletters, and maybe just start telling us about the writing that you do about trails and publicizing sort of what's going on with trails.
Okay, I do two newsletters. I'm editor of the Alaska Trails newsletter, which is statewide, and I also do my own Interior Trails Quarterly. And they both talk about trails, trail issues, anything that I can find on trails. I even address nationwide issues in the newsletters as well.
All right. And so, and people can find links to that from outdoorexplorer.org and look on the Today Show about the Equinox. But talk about, like, how do you distribute these? Are they, do people have to subscribe, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, they're distributed by email. That seems to be the quickest and easiest way to do this, since it's all volunteer. And you can go onto the Alaska Trails website, and there's a place there where you can click to be notified, and the newsletter will come to you. And then you can look on the Outdoor Explorer site for my email address to get the Interior Trails Quarterly.
Yeah. So Alaska Trails is a nonprofit. Steve Cleary, right, is the director. He's been on the show before. They're obviously looking for memberships, but you don't have to be a member.
Don't have to be a member, but we would love anyone who supports trails to be a member of Alaska Trails. We're really trying to advocate for trails statewide.
So tell me how you got into doing this, because it seems like a ton of work, and you're obviously not making any money at it. How did all this develop?
I've been a trails geek my whole life. I grew up backpacking, and when I moved to Fairbanks in 1989, I started to exercise even more and more, but I found I hate being on roads. I don't even own a road bike. I have a mountain bike. I have cross-country skis. I have snowshoes. I run on trails. Everything I do is on trails. And I began to notice after several years up here that we were losing some of the trails that we had been using. And so around that time, the Interior Trails Preservation Coalition was formed with several other people. It was formed mainly to protect the Equinox Marathon Trail. And we're still working on that. It hasn't fully been protected. But that's when I thought it would be important to get the information out there. And since I'm a former professional newspaper journalist, it just seemed natural for me to put together a newsletter. It was kind of funny. I thought when I started this that I would probably be producing 3 pages 4 times a year. And that seemed fine. It's turned into a monthly, and I often have 8 to 10 to 12 pages of information. So it was more work than I had planned for, but I'm happy to do it as long as we can protect trails.
Well, this whole issue of protecting trails is a little bit different from Anchorage because, you know, we've got sort of an interface between the wilderness and the city where there's public land. So you go over a line, you're either in a city park or state park or national forest. But here in Fairbanks, it seems like the city's kind of more smoothly just sort of integrates into the woods. And you still have snow machine usage illegal right in the middle of the city. So it's like it's much more, I don't know if I want to say more Alaskan, but it's a much more sort of rural-urban sort of mix here.
Frontier, yeah. That's the word.
So how do the trails end up disappearing? Is this because they're on somebody's private land?
Yeah, there are a lot of the trails. For example, Chena Ridge was not built up a lot when I moved here. And I've been part of a Tuesday night mountain bike group for many years and am helping lead it now. We used to do a ride up there and riding around on a bunch of the trails on the ridge. We gave up on that because more and more subdivisions got built up there and there weren't trails as a part of the subdivision plans. So we moved out of there. Down in Goldstream Valley, there used to be a big loop you could do on one side of Belaine. That loop is now connected by roads. It used to be just trails. So you can still make a connection there, but it's not quite the same as it used to be. It's a lot of the trails run over private land, and those lands get developed. And so if we don't protect the trails that we have now, then we'll end up losing them.
And a lot of your trails are much more like sort of the casual, you know, user-made trail. You know, now we've got our beautiful single-track mountain biking trails in Anchorage, which are machine-made and volunteer-made and, like, smooth and, like, they're, like, you know, they're amazing. But when you're talking about trails that, like, in the wintertime it might be a snow machine trail, and in the summertime it might be a bike trail. And it's just because there was maybe a game trail there at one point, and people just tramped it down with their feet.
Yeah, we've actually got 10 miles of built trails for mountain biking, the Esterdome single track. Other than that, the only other built trails I can think of off the top of my head are the ski trails. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it, we have a mixture of game trails that have been used by people over time so that they become people trails. Mining roads, we still have quite a bit of those close to town. Trapping trails, some of those have been turned into trails that people use. The mushers put in trails to train. It's quite a mix. And some of them are winter only, and some of them, you know, are used also in the summertime as well.
So are people getting more receptive to this issue of protecting the trails? Because, I mean, it's a pretty active community, I would think. Or is it like a culture war thing, like it was at one time in Anchorage, where like it's like the green liberals are for the bike trails, and so the conservatives have to be against it?
Probably a little mix of both. Uh-huh. We've definitely got a more active community, but we don't have what I would consider a really strong active trails community. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we only have a handful of people who are actually doing things toward that. And I think it's because we haven't lost enough trails to really stir people up. There's still a lot of trails you can do, so if you lose one or two here or there, there's a lot more that you can still get out and do things on. And we do have a lot of old landowners who, don't want people on their land. And we've got a big mining community here. Some of the miners are perfectly fine with trail use. Others don't want to have anything to do with trails because they feel like it could interfere with their mining. So we've got those issues.
So you kind of need to know where you're going a little bit.
You do need to know. A lot of the trails are not marked. Basically, the rule of thumb up here is if it does not have a no trespassing sign, it's fine. There are a few trails that say your use is welcome, but you're crossing private land. Some say only non-motorized only, but most usually just say, you know, just respect the land and it's fine. So yeah, there's a, and there's a lot of, I think there's mental health trust land up here, and there's university land that is not signed is no use. So people go ahead and use it as though they should.
Have you ever counted up how many miles of trails that are available for your use you got here? I mean, it must be, because you can go like way, way out in the wilderness.
No, I never have. Thought about one of the projects that I have in the back of my head is to catalog the trails. We have hundreds of miles of trails, definitely. Less so in the summertime, because a lot of our trails are through wetlands. But definitely hundreds of miles of trails. We had, for 3 years, the Sluicebox 100 ran up here. Tried to go to the, in the beginning, it tried to go to the three main domes here, our mountains, which aren't all that tall. But Esther Dome, Pedro Dome, and Murphy Dome. And so the first year of the race, it actually touched all those. It was an extremely difficult race to put on because there were at least a dozen landowners, and I think more than that, maybe 20 or 25 landowners that the organizers had to work with in order to make it happen. So it was a lot of work to put it on. And then there was an issue with the railroad not wanting us to cross the tracks. So pretty soon we were doing Esther Dome twice, and we're not doing Murphy Dome, but still doing Pedro Dome. And then finally, it came down to one guy, Joel Holman, was doing either going to do the Sluicebox or the White Mountains 100. And he polled a few people, and they said, well, if you have to choose, choose the White Mountains 100. So he's still doing that one.
And what's that race?
The White Mountains National Recreation Area is just north of Fairbanks. It's got some summer trails in it, but it's mainly a winter use system. Got a lot of public use cabins. I think we've got about a dozen up there. And it's got, I'm guessing, about 200 miles worth of trails in the wintertime that are really popular with mushers, snow machiners, skiers. Fat bikers are really starting to use it a lot. So the White Mountains 100 does a big loop through the middle of it. And it's 100 miles long. Let's see, it limits to, I believe it's 65 people now. And there's a lottery system because so many people want to do it.
And you and your wife did it, right?
Yeah. Corrine and I did it cross-country skiing. At the time, we were the fastest, slowest skiers to finish it. In other words, we were the fastest people to be the last place skiers, which took us, Corrine's going to bonk me on the head if I get the numbers wrong, but I think it was 32 and a half hours.
Straight? You're just skiing the whole time?
Yeah, except for, you know, a rest like an hour or so at a rest stop. But yeah, pretty much straight. So, and then last year on a lark, I did it on something called a kick sled, which is basically a mushing sled without the dogs. It's something I read about. It's popular in Scandinavia. I thought it was going to be the newest, greatest thing. And I had a lot of fun with it, but that was brutal. It took me 38 hours to finish it. So,
you like dragging this thing up hills and stuff? It doesn't seem like a really good idea.
Well, when conditions are right, it works really good. I mean, you've seen mushers pedal, they push with their foot. The dogs are pulling, so that makes it a lot easier. Well, when conditions are right, the sled scoots along pretty good. But if it's a little slow, if it's a little soft, you end up running behind pushing or getting out in front and pulling. And I did a lot of that.
Okay, now this is starting to sound like torture, but I've known Eric for a long time, so I know that he'll do almost anything. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I'm in Fairbanks talking with Eric Troyer, who edits the Alaska Trails newsletter and is super involved in protecting and developing trails in Fairbanks, where they've got an amazing network of trails and kind of a different kind of trail culture than we have in Anchorage, where we have our, you know, we kind of get a little bit spoiled, I think, with our Nordic Ski Association grooming and our paved bike trails and stuff. It's a little bit more of the rustic Alaska up here, but also lots of fun of events. And a couple of times I came up and stayed with you guys and did the Sonot, which is the 50K race, similar to our tour of Anchorage. But it's different because it's got a
just a lower key feel, you know. It's a one mass start, everybody together. And a lot of it, you're skiing on a river. I guess that's one of your trails, is the Chena River. And then up to Birch Hill, which is a great ski area. It seems like you've got a lot of events going on up here.
Yeah, we actually do. In the summertime, the Running Club North has a whole trail series. So there's 8 runs. One of them happens in Nenana, and the rest happen in the Fairbanks area. And then there's, of course, the Equinox Marathon, our premier event. And then the ski club. Oh, I'm trying to remember how many trails we have. 4 town series events, 3 distance series, and then the Sonat. So we have those. And then there's also 3 long distance races, multi races. Let's see, there's the Chena River to Ridge, which is a 25 and 50 mile race, either by foot, ski, or snow bike. There's the White Mountains 100, which is foot, ski, or snow bike.
Or kick sled.
Or kick sled, right. And I say snow bike, but it's actually termed fat bike. I know some people will take me to task for that. And then there's the Tanana River Challenge, which varies, but it's been about 20, 25 miles or 50 to 60 miles. So those are, and there's a few other races here and there, but that's quite a bit.
And that's leaving out all the dog races, and I'm sure there's snowmobiling races.
I don't know that we have, well, we have the Iron Dog, right. But other than that, there's a lot of snow machine events, but no races that I know of. Definitely a lot of dog mushing races, for everything from out in Toke all the way up to, of course, the Open North American, which is the big one up here.
Which is kind of is analogous to what our Fur Rendezvous World Championship used to be, except that I hardly ever get to do it anymore because we don't have enough snow. But it seems like you guys have better snow than we do. So I guess that's a little bit of an advantage of Fairbanks, in that you actually had a good ski season last year, when the last 3 years or so, Anchorage, we've had a lot of thawing and not much snow. But you seem to be doing better up here.
Yeah, last year we had a lot of snow before Thanksgiving and not much afterwards, but since it didn't melt, we got to ski on that and made things a lot better. So one of that's actually not last year, but the year before, we had a similar thing happen, a lot of snow early and then not much for a while. And my wife and I ended up getting fat bikes because of it. The snow, we love to ski, but the snow became kind of icy after a while. And we found out that's a great time to go biking on the snow trails. So now we both fat bike and cross country ski.
Yeah, and then the it gets a lot colder here than it gets in Anchorage. I mean, like the plus side is your snow doesn't melt, but I know that in Anchorage for like elite racers, they cut it off at like around five above, and for the junior Nordic little kids, they cut it off around 5 below. I guess the little kids are tougher or something. What are your cutoffs here?
Actually, junior Nordics used to be 10 below, and then a couple of years ago, they changed it to 5 below because they weren't taking into account the wind chill.
So you're getting soft, in other words.
Well, now we just last year started a junior Nordics program at UAF, which is down a little bit lower than Birch Hill, which is where the rest of our junior Nordics take place. And because that's lower, it tends to be colder. So the cutoff for there is 10 below. And then of course, if you get up older, the distance series is almost all adults and teenagers. And we don't really have a cutoff for that. So we've skied in 20 below.
Wow. What is it like skiing when it's that cold? I mean, it seems like, number one, the wax doesn't matter, because everything's going to be so sticky. And then don't your lungs kind of feel frozen when you do that?
No, people tend to, well, there's these masks you can wear now that help help you breathe easier. And most people wear buffs or something over their mouth, and that helps moisturize the air before it gets down into your lungs. So people usually do that. A few people get by without it, but that's usually the case. But you know what's amazing to me as a skier? I mean, when it gets down that cold, I definitely classic stride, no question about it. But there are some of the top skiers skate ski at 20 below and just put in pretty fast times. It just blows me away.
Yeah, I mean, they always go faster no matter what, right? So you've got a great skiing culture up here, all ages, as we mentioned, and Birch Hill is a pretty fun area to ski. And it's sort of over the years that I've been coming up, it's just every year it just seems to get a little bit better, a little bit more professional in terms of the grooming and the trails. Tell us a little bit about Birch Hill and what's been happening there.
Yeah, Birch Hill. Well, we've got a real strong ski club, the Nordic Ski Club of Fairbanks. So it has a real strong tradition of having really good events. And we've got John Estill up here, who used to be U.S. ski team coach. And he has been doing a lot in guiding the development of Birch Hill. We've got more than 30 kilometers of trails now on Birch Hill. And just this last summer, we did more work. We got a new equipment building. John made some modifications to the existing trails. Well, John and our head groomer, Tom Helmers, got some help from Keegan Randall too on designing things. That's for the U.S. Distance National Series, which are going to be held up here in March. So more changes. And then we got a grant, thanks in large part to our club president, Bruce Jamison. For a new trail called the Sunnyside Trail, which will connect Birch Hill Recreation Area to the base, to the lodge, downhill ski lodge on base. So yeah, great things are happening at Birch Hill, which is, I mean, we have groomed trails too, excellently groomed trails, and that's one of the nice things about Fairbanks is you can either on any day, you can go out and ski on an excellently groomed cross-country ski trail, or you can head out and hit the snow machine trails and either ski or bike or run, whatever you want to do.
And go basically as far as you want and kind of have an adventure out in the wilderness, which is a little bit different. I mean, I guess you can go up to Chugach State Park and do that in Anchorage, but it's a bit more tame in some ways, It's a bit more sort of not just sort of like out and whatever, wherever and whatever.
Yeah, no, we've got a friend, Jay Cable, who often bikes from home in the Goldstream Valley, and he'll bike all the way out on trails out to the White Mountains Recreation Area and back, which is a round trip of more than 50 miles. And that's only touching the White Mountains Recreation Area. You could go on farther than that. So it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, could go kind of as far as you want. Let's talk a little bit about events people might want to come up from Anchorage to participate in. We mentioned the Sonat Kazut, which is a 50-kilometer ski trail. It's kind of the last big distance race of the sort of the marathon races we have in Alaska, where you'll have the Tour of Anchorage, and there's the big race in Homer and the Usyk and Talkeetna, and then sort of and it's a great way to end your season is to come up here and do that. So that's one great race. Starts on the Chena River and goes 50 kilometers, 25 up into the Birch Hill and comes back. Do you have other citizens' races people might be interested in doing?
Oh, sure. Well, of course, the Equinox Marathon. It's a wonderful race. You don't even have to run it. Some people hike it. And it's a great race. You get to go up onto Esther Dome, and if on a nice day, you get to see Denali from there. It's just incredible. And then there we have, well, like the White Mountains 100 actually draws quite a few people from Anchorage. And the Chena River to Ridge, we usually get a few people from Anchorage and other areas out of state. The Tanana River Challenge is another one. We've got
And tell us about, I don't think you mentioned that one before.
Well, the Tanana River Challenge is another multi-user race. So it's either foot, cross-country skier, or fat bike. And it actually starts here in town. And it originally was run by Sally and Audun Endestat, and it went from Nenana to Anchorage, started as a ski race. New people have taken it over, and sometimes they do that, and sometimes they do loops within the Tanana State Forest, which is on the starts on the Tanana River, and then it goes up into the many trails we have in the state forest. So there's that one as well.
So what about biking races? You have a very active mountain biking community here, and I don't think we've touched on those.
Yeah, we actually have the Icicle Bicycle races, which there's about one a month. throughout the winter. And Chris Knott is the organizer of those. And he actually, where appropriate, invites skiers to come along and do the race as well. So I've actually skied some of those races. But those are usually shorter races, maybe 15 to 20 miles. Though he has done a longer one, which is the day after the Yukon Quest, we go backwards from Two Rivers from the Quest back to the start, which is a lot of fun. You just have to avoid the little brown mines in the trail. So those are fat biking has actually gotten really popular here. I know it's really popular in Anchorage, but it's gotten more and more popular up here. They're selling a lot of fat bikes, and we just have so many trails to go on that it's kind of, you know, you gotta, if you're an outdoors person, it just seems like a natural to have a fat bike up here.
Yeah. So it's Outdoor Explorer. We're in Fairbanks, and we've been talking about trails here with Eric Troyer, who does the trails Alaska Trails newsletter. I'm interested in what kind of conflict you've had between motorized and non-motorized, because you, as we mentioned earlier, you've still got usage of snow machines right in city limits, like right through the middle of Fairbanks, and you know, there have been big conflicts over the years. In Anchorage, snow machines were banned from within the city limits a long time ago. How does that work out for you guys? Because, you know, sometimes skiers get really upset about, you know, motorized users ruining their trails and so forth.
You know, occasionally it happens, but it's actually not very common. I've heard a few stories of snow machiners going too fast on trails and almost hitting someone. And every once in a while, someone will get onto the Birch Hill or University trails and ruin the groom trails. But for the most part, people are respectful. We've got a lot of room up here, which is really nice. So snow machiners have lots of trails to go out, and they don't need to go onto the groomed ski trails. There's just so much to do. And we even have our own groomed trails out in the, for snow machining, out in the Chena River Rec area, which is a whole other area of trails, which is just incredible. While I've heard a few stories, for the most part, there aren't a lot of conflicts up here between motorized and non-motorized. People are very respectful of each other, and we have a lot of room, and people are polite for the most part.
So you don't have like segregated areas or anything?
No, really, the only restrictions we have are the ski trails in the winter time. The University, Birch Hill, we've got some ski trails. Pearl Creek Park is kind of a hidden gem, but it's for non-motorized use. And then there's Two Rivers and Salsha Elementary. They both have ski trails. Otherwise, out in the Chena River State Recreation Area, there's the south side of the river, generally speaking, is non-motorized, not completely. And the north side is multi-use motorized. So in other words, you non-motorized and motorized can use the trails out there. White Mountains is all multi-use motorized. We have very little restrictions in that regard to trails.
And you mentioned the Chena River State Recreation Area, and there's amazing trails out there. And for the most part, you can mountain bike anywhere you can hike, right? I mean, do you have any no mountain biking trails?
Very few, but there are. Out in the Chena River State Recreation Area, there's no mountain biking on the Angel Rocks Trail,
which would be pretty challenging.
And the Chena Dome Trail. Yeah, there's no mountain biking on those. And it would just, you would be walking your bike for the most part anyway. I should mention there's a new race. It's just been run 2 years, the Angel Creek 50, which is out almost totally in the Chena River State Recreation Area. Covers some of the great trails out there, the Compo Trail, the Angel Creek Hillside Trail, the Angel Rocks Trail. And I actually tried it 2 years ago and got to mile 42 and got pulled because of time. And I helped organizers run it this past year, but that's starting to draw attention too. So it's yet another trail race people can do up here.
Yeah, and people don't know, from Anchorage, don't know about what a great area that Chena River State Recreation Area is. People know about Chena Hot Springs, But on the road out there, which I guess is like 40 miles or so, runs through the recreation area, which is amazing. And so many great trails and beautiful campgrounds. And if you're coming from Anchorage, you just come up for a, you know, vacation and camp out there and have a great time. So, Eric, you do a statewide trails newsletter. And as we mentioned, people could find out about that and how to sign up for it for free at outdoorexplorer.org. And clicking on today's show about the Equinox Marathon, what kind of issues are happening sort of on trails as a subject statewide? I mean, what are the main things you're writing about, or what are problems people are dealing with?
Well, I can, first of all, my thinking locally, the Equinox Marathon Trail is not completely protected, even though that race has gone on for more than 50 years. And people are working to try to get it protected, but there are still a couple of landowners that are not giving easements for one reason or another. And that's been difficult. we've got something that's new up here is using motorized trail equipment for building trails. People are not necessarily used to that up here. We did do the Esterdome single track trails that way. That wasn't in a neighborhood area, so it didn't cause too much problems. But one person now is trying to do that, or actually a couple of people, on the Scarlin Trail, which runs through a neighborhood, and people are really opposed to that. They feel like it's making the trail into a highway. Even though the people who are building it say that's not the case. And I tend to agree with that side. I think that it looks like a highway in the beginning, but then the grass grows in and it becomes a nice trail. So that's kind of the big issues that I can think of off the top of my head here in Fairbanks. Statewide, you know, basically what I hear about is just more and more trails being built. And people, the big thing that's been going nationwide too is sustainable trails, which basically is building a trail that sheds water properly so that it's not eroded, and so it's easier to use. A lot of the trails, especially in the Fairbanks area, were built by miners. And miners just wanted to get to where they were going, so they went straight up and over hills, which makes for very steep trails. Sustainable trails tend to follow the contour lines. And so there's a lot more of that happening across the state where trails are being built and or old trails are being turned into sustainable trails so that they will be last a lot longer and be a lot more enjoyable to use.
Yeah, and it's pretty exciting that it's become such a movement of trail sports and of people really expanding it like way beyond what we ever would have thought of decades ago. It's really, really exploded, and folks younger than us are really driving a lot of this. But it's great that you have taken on this role of helping trails along with the newsletter and all your volunteer work. And thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Charles.
So we've been hearing from Eric Troyer, who is the editor of the Alaska Trails newsletter. Our show is produced by Eric Bork. Hannah Doro is the assistant producer, helps line up guests. My name is Charles Wolforth. Join us again next week, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.